Good morning.
Morning, Howard. It's Michelle.
Hi, Michelle.
How's it going?
Good. How's it feel to be back to work?
Bittersweet.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. Well, I saw, by the way, that the mayor of Seattle, I know you were just there, is resigning.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he was, he's accused of molesting like five different men, boys, or whatever.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I've been using that other call-in number, Michelle. Hopefully, everything is copacetic with the sound.
Yeah, I hope so. I think it will be. We used it last
Okay.
time, right? Because we didn't have
Yeah.
any sound problems then.
No.
Morning, Howard.
Hey Mike, how are you?
Good. How are you, sir?
I'm in mourning for the Oriole season.
Well, I don't know what to tell you.
I know what to say. They're done. Cooked. When they hit, they don't pitch. When they pitch, they don't hit.
Yeah.
On the other hand, did you see Cleveland won its 20th straight game?
Probably go 3 and out in the playoffs.
I don't know. They got a good team. It's all about pitching.
I agree.
You know?
Hi, Howard. It's Sam Welsh.
Hey, Ann, I just emailed you. I saw your email.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, no problem. Get started here in 2 minutes. Somebody's phone's gone off. Hey, Mike, is the sound okay? Remember a couple times ago you said the sound wasn't good?
Yes. Perfect right okay. now.
Okay, good.
I expect it that way until you start.
I don't know where that music's coming from.
So far away from home, so far away oh, that
hopefully
I
hopefully we can get rid of that music.
You'll have to talk really loud.
I think I found the source. I can see where
right.
the sounds are coming from.
Okay, we're going to get started. Michelle, can you put this on mute, please?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Okay, well, good morning to everybody. It is September 13th. Hard to believe that it is September, but it is, and before you know it, we'll be into October. So there's lots to talk about this morning, as usual. There have been a number of proposed statutes introduced into Congress in the last few weeks, primarily, of course, by Republicans, seeking to turn back the clock on things that happened under the Obama administration. So last week, Senator Orrin Hatch, as you know, a Republican from the state of Utah, introduced what he called the Employee Rights Act. And under this Employee Rights Act, the intent would be to turn back much of what transpired under the Obama administration to liberalize the National Labor Relations Act. So it would, in effect, get rid of the so-called quickie elections, that is, the period of time between the time that a union files a union petition to represent employees in a bargaining unit and the time that an election actually takes place. It would prohibit unions in a representation campaign from obtaining access to employees' phone numbers and email addresses, something that is controversial and that happened during the Obama administration. It also, in a pretty controversial way, would state that if an employer was already unionized and had 50% turnover among its employees, that there would be a requirement for a new representation election to ascertain whether or not the employee still wanted to be represented by that same union. And similarly, it would also do away with the opportunity of unions to gain representational rights simply by showing authorization cards to an employer. Instead, it would require that a NLRB-conducted election be instituted. Along similar lines, another act was introduced by a Michigan congressman, Tim Walberg, in July, called the Workforce Democracy and Fairness Act. Again, that would propose to get rid of the so-called quickie elections. And there was a Save the Local Business Act, which was very recently introduced by a congressman from Alabama. This would interestingly revise the requirements under the National Labor Relations Act and the Fair Labor Standards Act having to do with the direct control standard for dual employment. You'll remember, and I've spoken about this in prior telebriefs, that under the Obama administration and the Obama National Labor Relations Board, they determined that two employers could be deemed to be dual employers if either one of them exercised what was deemed to be indirect control over employees as opposed to direct control, which was the standard for decades under the National Labor Relations Act. The final proposed legislation is something that was introduced by a congressman in Iowa, Steve King, called the National Right to Work Act, which would, on a national level as opposed to a state level, outlaw any kind of union security provision in a collective bargaining agreement, which would require union membership as a condition of employment. There are many states that already have such requirements or prohibit such requirements, in the South primarily, and some in the Midwest, but this would codify it on a national level. Whether any of these statutes really gain traction will be seen, I think, as a matter of priority in terms of the pending agenda of the Trump administration for health care reform, for infrastructure, institution of funds, and also for tax reform. So I'm not sure that any of these are on a high priority list, but nevertheless, they are interesting. They bear watching, and I think that to the extent that any of them even are modified to some extent, they would certainly be a lot better for business than what happened during the Obama administration with the great expansion of employee and union rights at the National Labor Relations Board and at the Department of Labor. Speaking of the Department of Labor, some of you may have read last week that the same federal judge in Texas who granted an injunction against enforcement of the Department of Labor's revised overtime rules struck down that rule in its entirety last week, contending that with the increase in salary for exempt employees from $24,000 and change to $47,000 and change, that in effect, that drastic change, that drastic increase, voided the duties test for administrative, executive, professional, and computer professionals under the white-collar exemptions under the FLSA. Where this case will go now will be up to the Department of Labor. I think ultimately, and I've said this before, I think ultimately what will happen is that there will be a salary test to accompany the duties test, but I think that salary test will be somewhere in the $30,000 to $35,000 range for exemption as opposed to the $47,000 test that was initiated by the Obama Department of Labor and which I thought was very, very drastic and too high. And from a practical standpoint, some of you may have already increased salaries to that level of $47,000, so it's problematic as to what you want to do or what you have done. But I'm just predicting that at the end of the day, you will have a duties test and you will have a salary test, and I think it'll be somewhere in the $30,000 to $35,000 range. I wanted to mention a case that came out of the Connecticut Appellate Court just last week in a case called Thompson versus Department of Social Services. And in this case, an employee who was out on an FLSA leave wanted to extend that leave because of continuing medical problems. And I know that in prior telebriefs, we've talked about the fact that the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission takes the position that the mere fact that somebody has extinguished his or her FMLA leave doesn't mean that you don't have an obligation under certain circumstances as a reasonable accommodation to extend that period of leave. The interesting thing about this case arising in Connecticut State Court was that the employee wanted to extend leave, but in her doctor's note that she gave to the employer, the doctor's note said that she would not be able to return to work, in quotes, until reevaluated, close quotes, that her inability to return to work was, in quotes, ongoing, close quotes, and thirdly, that she should experience, in quotes, significant improvement, close quotes, in 1 to 2 months. And the employee never provided any more specific information about her medical status. So many of you, I know, probably get doctor's notes from time to time from people who were out on FMLA leave along these same lines. And I think the principle enunciated by this case is that, yes, you may have a duty to accommodate somebody who requests an extension of leave, but you don't have to accommodate somebody where the medical information that you have is so ambiguous or so indefinite, or where the employee's return to work is so indefinite into the future, that it becomes unreasonable to accommodate that particular employee, and that's what this case stands for. There are also federal cases along the same line of this. So if you have employees that are out on an FL, a family leave, leave of absence, and they say, well, look, I need another week or I need another two, and it's backed up by medical information, you very well may have an obligation to accommodate that employee. But if you have somebody who says, I need a longer extension, and the medical information is very indefinite and can't be clarified anymore, it would then be unreasonable to accommodate that individual, and you can go ahead and safely terminate that particular individual. Contrasted with that Connecticut case is a case that was filed by the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission 2 weeks ago. And this involved an employer called a nonprofit called the Illinois Action for Children, where they fired an employee who had been on leave for breast cancer treatment instead of providing an extension of her leave request. While she was getting these treatments for breast cancer, she requested a short period of additional leave in order to receive additional treatment. The employer terminated her. And contrasted, as I said, with the Connecticut case, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission basically sees this as a failure to accommodate for a reasonable period of time where it would not be an undue burden on the employer to do that. So two different kinds of situations, I think, very instructive as to how you deal with the employee who's out on an FLMA leave and who is extending or seeking to extend that leave based on medical information. Speaking about the FMLA, some of you may say or face with situations where you believe that an employee is abusing that FMLA leave, either because they have provided fraudulent information in order to obtain the leave, or where they're engaging in activity during the FMLA leave that would be inconsistent with such leave. For instance, you have an employee who's requested FMLA leave to deal with a sick parent or a sick child, and you gather information which leads you to believe that that employee is on vacation someplace out of the country or on a cruise, etc. I've had those situations in the past, and the question becomes, well, what do you do as an employer? Well, the answer is that you don't do anything differently than you would in investigating any other kind of workplace misconduct. The fact that an employee is on approved FMLA leave does not immunize that employee from having corrective action taken if the employee is abusing such leave or suspected of abusing such leave. The issue, however, is how do you conduct that investigation? And you conduct it the same way that you would in looking at any other act of alleged misconduct. You talk to witnesses. Sometimes if there is videotape, you look at the videotape that you have. You may even want to use an outside investigator to ascertain whether there's something going on with that particular employee, which would be inconsistent with the employee's allegation that the employee is unable to work during a specified period of time. The thing that's important in any of these cases, just as though in any workplace investigation, you would by necessity want to and be required to give the employee an opportunity to be confronted with any kind of evidence that you have, so you should speak to an employee or confront that employee with any evidence that you might have. And even if you have, let's say, a videotape taken by an outside investigator of an employee who supposedly was out on FMLA leave to take care of a broken leg, and you have videotape of that employee up on a roof putting in a TV antenna, you would certainly want to sit down with the employee and say, here's the videotape we have. What do you have to say for yourself? So the conclusion is that you can and should take action against an employee who is abusing his or her FMLA leave, but you need to go through due process requirements and make sure that you've spoken to all the relevant witnesses that you can in dealing with the situation. I thought it would be appropriate, given the fact that we've seen two horrendous acts of nature between Harvey in Houston and Irma in Florida, having to do with employers' shutdown of business, particularly as we head into the winter season here on the East Coast. And I want to review these rules with you just so there's a common understanding from an HR standpoint and from a wage and hour standpoint. So, here are the various scenarios that I'd like to review. You have, either due to a hurricane or a snowstorm or whatever, a situation where your office is closed for a few days because of that particular event. How do you deal with that event? Well, with regard to your non-exempt employees, as you know, are only obligated to be paid for the hours that they actually work. So if your office is closed for a few days and the employees cannot work, you're under no obligation to pay the non-exempt employee. But how about the exempt employee? What do you do with the exempt employee? Well, the exempt employee, as you probably know, is entitled to be paid for an entire week unless, okay, place of work is closed for more than a week and the exempt employee has not done any work during that week, you can, in fact, get by without paying the exempt employee. But again, if your place of work is closed for a week or more, you need not pay the non-exempt employees and you need not pay the exempt employees. How about if you are closed for 2 days because of a snowstorm? And again, you are non-exempt employees, don't come in, you're not obligated to pay them. Your exempt employees don't come in. You're still obligated to pay the exempt employees for the full salary. But how about if you're open, it's just that the non-exempt employees don't come in? Again, you're not obligated to pay them, but suppose you're open during the week, but you have an exempt employee who can't make it in for 2 days. What the FLSA would say is that you can properly dock that exempt employee for the 2 days, the same as you would for a personal day, as long as you pay him for the other 3 days. Now, question whether or not you really want to dock the exempt employee. That becomes an issue of employee morale, but under the FLSA, if the exempt employee doesn't make it in, but you're still open for an entire day, you're not obligated to pay the exempt employee. But what if the exempt employee comes in 3 hours late but still works the remaining 5 hours? Then you're obligated to pay that exempt employee for the entire time, for the entire week. So again, the difference between non-exempt and exempt is that non-exempt are only paid for hours worked, irrespective of whether they come in late, they leave early because of weather, etc. Exempt employees are obligated to be paid if they work any part of a week, unless your place of work is closed for the entire week or unless you are open and the exempt employee does not come in for an entire day. So as we head into the winter season, keep those in mind if you have a policy that has to do with inclement weather or any other kind of act of nature beyond your control. Along with the wage and hour issues that we've talking about, I had a client ask me a week ago about lunch hour issues. Again, I want to review what the wage hour law is on that. Under the Fair Labor Standards Act, there is no requirement to have a paid lunch hour or lunch period. However, if you do have lunch periods for employees, and the lunch period has to be at least 20 minutes if you're doing that, and you have to excuse the employee from any kind of duty or responsibility, so that if the employee is answering the phone during a purported lunch period or answering an email, that is not a complete abrogation of his duties and responsibilities, and that can account for work time or paid time under the Fair Labor Standards Act. And there are many cases today where employers have gotten sued because employees are not excused from their duties and responsibilities having to do with a lunch period. So if you have lunch periods, make sure that employees are not obligated and, in fact, are not doing work, either answering phones or emails, etc., during the time that they are on a meal break. Very important, because that can create class-wide liability for you. The last thing that I wanted to mention is that last week the Federal Office of Management and Budget importantly stayed the regulation that we've talked about, promulgated by the Obama Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, that would have required employers, as part of their EEO1 reporting, to include salary data along with the traditional data on ethnicity, sex, etc., that you include on your EEO1 form. This would have been, I think, a very burdensome requirement and a time-consuming requirement for employers. So it's no surprise to me that the Office of Management and Budget under the Trump administration has stayed that particular requirement. You will not be required until otherwise notified to include that data on your new EEO1 report. So even though the new EEO1 forms have on them a place for pay, you don't need to include that unless and until we get information from the federal government that they are lifting that stay and otherwise imposing that requirement on you as a reporting employer. Okay, those are the developments for the day. Michelle, can you take this off of mute? Okay, as I always do, if anybody has any questions, comments, feel free to bring them up here, or if you'd rather do it in private, you can call me at 410-209-6417 or email me at hkerman@offutkerman.com. Any questions out there?
No, thank you.
Okay, well, if not, hope everybody got something practical out of this, and we will see you on the fourth Wednesday in September. So have a good next couple weeks.
Thank you, Howard.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you, Howard.